Chapter 16.
No one is immune from failure. All have tasted the bitterness of defeat and disappointment. A warrior must not dwell on that failure, but must learn from it and continue on. But not all learn from their errors. That is something those who seek to dominate others know very well, and know how to exploit. If an opponent has failed once at a logic problem, his enemy will first try the same type of problem, hoping the failure will be repeated. What the manipulator sometimes forgets, and what a warrior must always remember, is that no two sets of circumstances are alike. One challenge is not like another. The would-be victim may have learned from the earlier mistake, or there may have been an unanticipated or unknown crossing of life paths.
Sorry I missed our last two sessions.
Atlas's voice came from Arenda's comm.
As I told you, my employer has come for a visit, and we've all been pretty busy.
I understand, Arenda said. She did, too, which wasn't to say she was happy with the situation. Not just because of the interruption in her combat training, but because she really enjoyed Atlas's company. But work was work, and even in the upper echelons of Imperial power, only a few had the luxury of picking and choosing their own schedules. If you ever do get a couple of hours you don't know what to do with, though, let me know, she said.
Actually, that's why I'm calling. I'm watching the office alone tonight. Everyone else is off to a party. And if we move the table in the conference room over to the wall, there should be plenty of room for a sparring session. You game?
I think so, Arenda said, frowning. This was out of the blue. Still, it would be a chance to get in some practice. Not to mention a couple of hours of human contact that wasn't just pitching high-minded policies to senators and ministers. When do you want me? And where do you want me? You've never given me the address.
I haven't? Oh, sorry.
He rattled off the address. A place in one of the office spires near the Senate building.
As to time, the sooner the better. Like I said, everyone's already gone, and we'll have the place to ourselves.
Aside from door watch droids?
Well, of course, aside from them. But I'm high enough clearance that I can vouch to them for you. How soon can you be here?
Arenda checked the chrono. Technically, she was supposed to keep the office open for another 40 minutes, just in case some senator's aide dropped by for more information on one of Higher Sky's policy positions. But as usual, she was alone here this afternoon. Just this once, she decided, the Empire's movers and shakers could wait until tomorrow. 10 minutes, she said.
10 it is,
Atlas said.
Just buzz the door when you get here, and I'll let you in.
Arenda backtracked the address on her datapad during the air taxi ride, hoping to find out who exactly Atlas worked for. But that information was unlisted. Once inside the building, Atlas had already cleared her with the outer door droids, she looked for a directory or some other index or occupant listing. Again, nothing. Apparently the residents didn't want even droid-approved visitors to know who was here and where exactly they were located. She'd already guessed Atlas's employer was very high up in the official ranks. This merely confirmed it. The two door-watch droids in the hallway stared silently at Arenda as she approached the office door. But they permitted her to touch the buzzer without challenge. Atlas answered promptly, gave the droids his personal clearance password, and ushered her inside.
Nice,
she commented, looking around as he led the way through the foyer and down a long corridor. The carpeting, wall hangings, and pillar sculpts were elegant but more understated than the decor she'd seen in other senators' offices. Someone who liked luxury but didn't feel a need to rub people's faces in it.
Your boss must be even more important than I guessed,
Probably so,
Atlas agreed.
This way.
Arinda frowned, casually dropping a half step behind him. There was an odd layer of emotional distance in Atlas's speech and mannerisms tonight. Something wasn't right.
Where's the party?
She asked.
What party?
The party you said everyone else had gone to.
Oh.
He stopped by an open door and gestured her toward it.
In here, please.
Thank you,
she said. Something was definitely wrong, but it was too late to back out now. Brushing past him, she stepped into the room and came to an abrupt halt. This wasn't the conference room Atlas had promised. It was an office, as luxuriously appointed as the foyer and corridor, with trinkets and trophies from around the galaxy on display, and no room whatsoever for sparring. And seated behind the carved pearl desk,
"Good evening, Miss Price,"
Moff Gotti said, rising to his feet.
"It's nice to see you again."
For a long moment, Arinda stood where she was, the memory of her last run-in with Gotti flooding over her. This was the man who'd thrown spice on her and then threatened to have her arrested. The man who'd used that blackmail lever to make her betray Senator Ranking. The man who'd sent her entire life into a tailspin.
"Your Excellency," she said,
stepping away from the door and walking toward him.
"Nice to see you as well. You really should have taken me into your confidence back in the Alessandra Hotel."
Gotti's confident smile slipped a bit.
"No?"
"Absolutely,"
Arinda assured him.
"If you had, I could have told you that I was just as eager to take down Senator Ranking as you were."
"Really?"
Gotti said, eyeing her closely.
"Your own boss?"
"The man who engineered the Imperial takeover of my family's mining business on Lothal,"
she corrected.
"I just would have preferred to destroy him without messing up my own life in the process."
She stopped beside the guest chair in front of his desk.
"May I?"
"By all means,"
Gotti said, waving her to the chair. His smile, she noted, was back to full confidence.
"I would argue from results that the upheaval in your life was the best thing that could have happened to you. Your poise and confidence alone show you've come a long way."
"And I probably would have come still further if I hadn't had to start over at the bottom,"
Arinda said. She glanced around as she sat down, noting that Atlas had taken up position in the center of the doorway behind her, as if expecting to thwart an escape attempt. The fact that she hadn't even tried to run seemed to have confused him.
"But that's water under the bridge,"
she added, turning back to Gotti.
"So, to what do I owe the pleasure of this invitation?"
"First poise, now directness,"
Gotti said approvingly.
"Excellent. Let's see if we can add honesty to the list. Who do you work for?"
"I'm sure you already know. The Higher Skies Advocacy Group."
"Good,"
Gotti said.
"Let's continue. Who hired your advocacy group to destroy me?"
Arinda frowned.
"Excuse me?"
"No, no. The useless, naive child approach won't work anymore,"
Gotti said.
"Not for you."
"I'm not naive, and I'm not a child,"
Arinda said as calmly as she could.
"I'm just confused, because I have no idea what you're talking about."
"Really?"
Gotti growled.
"You have no idea that very soon after one of your people came to talk to me, some of my confidential financial information was recovered from a smuggler gang? Or that one of my mines was hit by raiders barely a week later?"
"What was stolen?"
Arinda asked.
Gotti frowned.
"What?"
"I asked what was stolen,"
Arinda repeated.
Maybe whoever took your data is only interested in your minds or other resources.
Gotti gave a snort.
Don't insult my intelligence,
he bit out.
No one robs a moth, nor do they want to continue breathing. These are either the preliminary pinpricks leading to an attack, or else a diversion. Either way, I want to know who's behind it.
His eyes narrowed.
Is it Renking?
Your Excellency.
He's the obvious one,
Gotti went on.
But subtlety has never been his strong point. A different senator. They're forever jockeying for position and advantage. Or maybe a moth.
He barked a cynical laugh.
Of course. It's Tarkin, isn't it? Grand Moff Tarkin, for whom nothing is ever quite enough. He's wanted me gone for years. Tell me it's him.
Arinda shook her head.
I'm sorry, Your Excellency, but I can't help you.
Gotti leaned back in his chair, his gaze steady on her face.
Fine. You don't know? Maybe your boss does. Let's call and tell him you've been invited to my office, just as Otlis set it up. Let's see if he makes any interesting suggestions as to what you should do once you're here.
Arinda thought about it. Driller seemed way too cheerful and open to be a spy. But there was the sketchiness about who else was working for him and what they were doing. There was his seemingly never-ending stack of credits. And maybe the best spies were the ones who didn't look the part.
All right,
she said, pulling out her comm.
I presume you want to listen in.
Of course.
Gotti beckoned Otlis over from the door.
Just in case you're planning to try something,
he added.
All I'm planning is a conversation,
Arinda said. Turning the comm speaker volume all the way up, she keyed Driller's number.
Hey, Arinda.
Driller's cheerful voice came on.
What's up?
I just got a call from Otlis,
Arinda said.
He can't come to the dojo tonight, but he has some free time, and Moff Gotti's office to himself, and wants to know if I can come over for a private session.
Great,
Driller said.
What did you say?
Arinda felt a cynical smile twitch at her lips. So Driller had known that Otlis worked for Gotti, yet hadn't bothered to mention that fact.
I said I needed to check with you and see if I could close up early.
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks,
Arinda said.
Any special instructions?
There was just the briefest hesitation.
What do you mean?
He asked. His voice subtly changed.
Instructions about what?
What I should do while I'm there,
Arinda said.
Like, oh, I don't know, anything I should look at or take notes on?
No, nothing like that,
Driller said, his voice returning to normal.
Just have your session and go home.
Arinda looked up at Gotti. His eyes were focused on the comm, his lips puckered in concentration. From the lack of a self-satisfied smirk, it didn't look like he'd heard whatever it was he was looking for. He probably hadn't. Almost certainly hadn't, even. He could hardly know Driller well enough to have noticed the hesitation or the briefly altered tone. But Arinda had caught both. Did that mean something was going on back at Higher Skies? Or was Driller simply tired or distracted by something else? Maybe there was a way to find out.
Thanks,
she said.
Listen, there's something else. Otlis said that there's a position opening up soon for an office assistant with some combat training. He was thinking I might want to apply.
You mean you'd leave Higher Skies?
Driller asked, his tone suddenly cautious.
You can't do that, Arinda. There's way too much work to be done, and you're our best rep.
Thanks, but I don't think you understand, she said. This isn't just some random office position. It's with Grand Moff Tarkin.
This time, even Gotti couldn't miss the pause.
Tarkin?
Driller asked carefully.
That's what Autolus said, Arinda said. And look, it's not like I'd be gone forever. When he's not here on Coruscant, I'd only be part-time, so I might still be able to do some work for you.
You'd at least be able to drop by and see us occasionally, right? Maybe have dinner and a chat?
Of course, Arinda said. I like talking to you. You know that.
Yeah, and vice versa,
Driller said.
Well, look, have a good session, and if you want to apply for the job, go ahead. Could be interesting.
Thanks, Arinda said. I'll see you in the morning.
Right. Good night.
Arinda keyed off the comm.
Well?
She asked, raising her eyebrows at Gotti.
Well, what?
He growled.
And what exactly was that nonsense about Tarkin?
Proof that you aren't anyone's target, Arinda said. If you were, he'd have told me to look around your office while I was here. Just like you obviously thought he might. And he wouldn't have been willing to let me lose my connection with Autolus, and therefore with you, to go work for Tarkin.
Slowly, some of the fire went out of Gotti's eyes.
You spin a good yarn, Miss Price,
he said.
You might even be right. But we really need to know for sure, don't we?
Meaning?
Meaning that from now on, you're my eyes and ears inside Higher Skies,
Gotti said.
You'll copy all their files, report on all their conversations, and make lists of all their contacts.
With an effort, Arinda kept her face expressionless.
I'm sure that's not necessary, Your Excellency.
Oh, I think it is,
Gotti said.
And you'll do it, or I'll call ISB and tell them you came here tonight to steal confidential files and data cards. Autolus will confirm that, of course.
Arinda looked up at Autolus. He looked back at her, his face expressionless.
I don't hire fools, Miss Price,
Gotti added quietly.
Autolus knew from the start that he'd been set up with you. He's kept me fully apprised of the game this whole time.
I've already told you I'm not playing any games.
Then you should welcome the chance to prove it,
Gotti said.
Autolus will give you what you need, and then he'll escort you home.
I don't need his protection,
Arinda said, looking up again. And to think she'd once thought of this man as a friend.
Or his company.
I'm sorry you feel that way,
Gotti said.
I also don't care. Good evening, Ms. Price. We'll be talking again. Very soon.
The trip to the apartment was very quiet. Autolus waited until she had unlocked and opened the door, then strode away into the lights and flickering signs of night. Neither had said a word the entire trip. The apartment was empty. Juahir was probably still at the dojo, or else was meeting with whoever had told her to hook up Autolus with her dear friend Arinda. Just as well. Arinda wasn't ready to face her right now anyway. She cooked dinner completely on autopilot, and ate it the same way. Afterward, she sat down at her computer, staring at the display and trying to think. She'd been dropped into a box. A very small, very uncomfortable box. Even the slightest hint that she was trying to cross Gotti, and he would hand her over to ISB. And with Autolus corroborating the charges, she would be convicted in record time. That left her no option but to spy on Higher Skies. But if Driller was in fact spying for someone, that someone wouldn't be happy if he caught Arinda digging into his secrets. If Driller wasn't spying, and if Arinda proved there was no deliberate threat against Gotti, the Moff might turn her over to ISB anyway, as a warning to his hypothetical enemies. It was the same box Gotti had trapped her in before. He probably expected it to work the same way again. Only this time, Arinda was prepared. And it was going to cost him. She worked on the computer for the next hour, pulling up data, digging into rumors and unsubstantiated reports, finding obscure financial records and hints. She spent another hour putting all of it together. Somewhere along the way, Juihir called and said she was heading to a party and not to wait up. Arinda hadn't planned to, anyway. She waited until she had everything in a neat package. Then, pulling out her comm, she keyed for the Universal Connection System. "My name is Arinda Price," she told the droid who took the call. "I want to send a message to a Navy officer whom I believe is on Coruscant."
"Name?"
She braced herself. He was either amazingly competent, she told herself once, or else he had powerful friends. Either way, he was worth reaching out to.
"Thrawn," she said. "Commander Thrawn."
He was waiting in a corner booth in the Gilroy Plaza diner when Arinda arrived, his features half concealed by the hood of his plain robe, his red eyes completely invisible. Her first thought was that it was the wrong person. But as she neared him, she saw he was wearing tinted glasses that hid all but the faintest glow. "Ms. Price," he greeted her as she reached the table. "You are late."
"Sorry,"
she apologized, glancing around as she sat down across from him. The diner was nearly deserted, with the only other patrons in a booth around the corner from the serving bar. That should give them sufficient privacy.
"Nice glasses. With your eyes covered, most people would probably assume you're a Pantoran."
"So I've been told," Thrawn said.
"Why did you ask me to meet you?"
Arinda studied him. His face was impassive, giving nothing away.
"I'm in something of a situation," she said. "I think you're also dealing with some problems. I'm hoping we can help each other."
He inclined his head slightly beneath the hood.
"Continue."
"This evening I was taken to a meeting with a high government official," she said. "He thinks the advocacy group I work with is trying to destroy him. He wants me to spy on them for him, and threatened to turn me over to ISB under false charges of espionage if I refuse."
"Did he seem confident in their threat?"
Arinda frowned. An odd question.
"Very confident."
Thrawn nodded.
"Continue."
"That's really about it," Arinda said. "I was hoping you would help me get out from under him."
"I see," Thrawn said. "And your weapon?"
Arinda blinked.
"What do you mean?"
"Surely you don't expect me to bring turbo laser fire to bear on his office," Thrawn said, a slight dryness to his tone. "I conclude you have some other weapon you believe will be useful against him."
Arinda smiled tightly. He was good, all right.
"I do,"
she said, pulling out her data pad.
"During his rant, he mentioned that one of his mines had been recently attacked. I poked around a little and found it."
She keyed the data pad and swiveled it around to face him.
"Anything interesting jump out at you?"
Thrawn nodded.
"Dunium."
"Yes,"
Arinda said.
"A good-sized vein of it, which he apparently never registered. He appears to be selling the Dunium to the Navy through hidden channels, probably at inflated profits, certainly without paying taxes on it."
"Or perhaps he's selling it elsewhere," Thrawn said.
"And the current black market in the metal will bring even more ridiculous profits,"
Arinda agreed.
"Either way, no one knew about it until someone dug up the data and raided the mine. I asked him what was stolen, but he never answered. I'm betting heavily it was some of the Dunium."
And do you believe his lack of disclosure is a weapon that can be brought to bear?
Exactly, Arinda said. I thought that since you're a friend of Colonel Ulloran, you could quietly pass this along to him.
By which I assume you mean anonymously.
Arinda felt her throat tighten.
Partly anonymously, yes, she said.
It's a little tricky. I don't want anyone but Ulloran knowing I gave it to you. But he needs to know, because I want it on his record, that I gave him this data, so that I don't get arrested or charged if it turns out someone at Higher Skies was the thief.
For a moment, Thrawn gazed at her from behind his glasses. Then slowly, he shook his head.
I can give this to Colonel Ulloran, he said. But I cannot do so now.
Arinda stared at him.
Why not?
Because the longer it is in his possession, the more likely it will become known to others within ISB, Thrawn said. Possibly including the close friend and secret ally of your corrupt official.
You think he has some specific ally there?
I am certain of it, Thrawn said. He said he threatened to send you to prison for theft. But his word alone would be insufficient to overcome the absence of evidence.
Not even the word of a senior official?
Senior officials are precisely those whom the ISB is tasked with monitoring, Thrawn said. Only with his secret ally could he know the charges against you would escape closer scrutiny.
I don't understand, Arinda said. How do you even know he has someone like that?
You said he was confident,
Thrawn reminded her.
A warrior does not threaten an enemy with an unloaded weapon unless he has no other choice.
He pulled the card from the datapad and slipped it into a pocket.
I will hold your information for Colonel Ulloran, but I will deliver it only when I judge the time to be right.
Arinda swallowed hard. She could see Thrawn's logic, and it made sense. But without Ulloran and ISB holding something over Gotti, there was no way she could take him on by herself.
What if I said I was willing to risk it?
I am not.
What if I sweeten the pot?
Arinda pressed.
You know military tactics, but I know politics. I could help you there.
I appreciate the offer, Thrawn said. But I do not need assistance.
Your aide might disagree,
Arinda said.
Ensign Vanto, in 3 years you've gone from lieutenant to commander, yet he's still an ensign. Why?
Even through the glasses she could see his eyes narrow.
That is a military matter.
Is it?
Arinda countered.
Remember, I was at the dojo when he got the news of your promotion. He was disappointed. Also resentful, I think, though he tried to hide it.
How do you know this?
He and Colonel Ulloran had a short conversation when the report came in,
Arinda said.
You were slapping sticks with Hisishi, so you probably couldn't hear them. But I was close enough to catch the gist of what they were saying.
Actually, she hadn't heard nearly as much as she was making it sound.
But she'd done some digging on Vanto while she was prepping for this meeting, and it hadn't been hard to put the pieces together.
Fortunately, she'd put them together right. Behind the glasses, Thrawn's eyes narrowed.
Promotions should not be affected by politics, he said.
Maybe they shouldn't, but they are,
Arinda said.
The way I read it, some of the senators and ministers don't like you. You're too good for them to attack directly, so they find other ways. Pressuring the High Command to keep your aid from advancing is one. Putting your ship Lust in line for repairs is another.
Thrawn seemed to straighten up.
Excuse me?
Oh, you hadn't caught that one?
Arinda asked.
Practically every other ship that needs dockyard space has been put on the list ahead of the Thunder Wasp. After all, The best way to make sure you don't outshine all their precious elite Core World officers is to keep you on Coruscant, away from any possible battles or engagements.
Interesting, Thrawn said. I had, of course, noted that the Thunder Wasp had been placed at the lowest priority. I assumed the repair ranking was based on which ships needed to be returned to patrol duty most quickly.
You are half right, Arinda said. Just substitute which captains they want back on duty and which one they don't, and you'll have the complete picture.
I see, Thrawn murmured. Have you an ally who can alter that?
I have some contacts,
Arinda said, running quickly through the list of senators and ministers she'd talked to while working with Higher Skies. Without knowing who was behind the vendetta against Thrawn, there was no way to guess which of them might be able to intervene on his behalf.
None of them is really an ally.
He was silent another moment. Tell me, who does your high government official fear?
I don't know that he fears anyone.
Then who does he hate? All who hold positions of power fear or hate someone or something.
Arinda thought back on Gotti's rantings.
Now that Thrawn mentioned it, there is someone he hates. Yes, she said.
So you have an enemy and a threat to that enemy, Thrawn said. That gives you two possible vectors of attack. One is to turn the threat into an ally, then use him against your enemy. The other, he paused and cocked his head to the side, is to use the threat as a lever against your enemy, in order to make him into your ally.
I see, Arinda said slowly, her mind spinning. When he put it that way, any recommendation as to which approach would be best?
Only you can decide that, Thrawn said. You must consider which weapons and levers you have available, and which approach offers the best chance of success.
He lifted a warning finger.
But remember that in neither case is your new ally likely to be your friend. His association with you will be based solely on fear or need. Fear of what you can do to him, or a need for what you can provide him. If either of those forces loses its value, so does your position.
Understood, Arinda said. Thank you, Commander. I think I know what to do now.
One other thing.
Thrawn's half-hidden eyes seemed to burn into hers.
It may be that your advocacy group will indeed prove to be more than you know. If you are to have Colonel Yularen's ultimate support and protection, you may need to turn your back on your colleagues. Are you prepared to do that?
Arinda smiled bitterly. Her colleagues. Driller, her boss. Juahir, her roommate. The only two people on Coruscant she knew well. The only people on this planet she'd ever called friends.
Absolutely, she said.
The Higher Skies office was deserted when Arinda arrived an hour later. Nor was anyone likely to drop by. Driller knew she'd been off to see Atlas, and would undoubtedly have relayed that information to Juahir. Arinda's failure to return to their apartment would probably be seen as evidence that she and Gotti's bodyguard had progressed from combat sparring to other forms of physical activity. A year ago, doing something so blatant or obvious would have embarrassed her. Now she barely noticed, let alone cared. All she cared about was that she now had all night to work without fear of interruption. It was just past dawn when she finally made the call.
This had better be important,
Gotti growled.
And I mean damn important. I'm this close to having Atlas whipped for waking me up. And you don't even want to know what I want to do to you.
It's important, Arinda assured him. You were right. Higher Skies is keeping watch on many important people. I found the files.
Of course I was right,
Gotti said blackly.
Any reason this revelation couldn't have waited until later?
It probably could have, Arinda conceded. But I thought you'd want to hear as soon as possible about the Tarkin file.
There was a brief silence.
They have a file on Tarkin?
He asked, the grumpiness abruptly gone.
What's in it?
I don't know, Arinda said. This one's under a different encryption than everything else I've found. But if it's like the ones I've been able to read, it probably has a lot of secrets in it. Things Tarkin wouldn't want anyone else knowing about.
Perfect. Yes, I absolutely want those files.
I thought you would, Arinda said. I can collate them with the other files I've been able to find, but I wanted to make sure you wanted this one.
Don't be stupid. You have the weapon I need to take down Tarkin, and you want to know if I want it? Get it on a data card and bring it to my office. Now!
Yes, Your Excellency, Arinda said. As I said, though, at the moment it's unreadable. If you give me time, I may be able to decrypt it.
Just bring it to me! I'll decrypt it. Let's see how high and mighty Grand Moff Tarkin is when I'm shoving his dirty little secrets down his throat.
Very well, Your Excellency, Arinda said. Do you also want the other information? Or do you want to wait until I've decrypted it?
I'll take anything you found on any of the other Moffs. You can hold off on anything else.
He muttered something unintelligible under his breath.
Tarkin.
I'll bring this over at once, then, Arinda said. Who in your office shall I give the data card to?
Good point. Yes. You'd better bring it directly to me, here.
He gave her a Whitehawk Tower address.
Otlis will meet you at the door and take the data card. Give it to him and only to him.
Yes, Your Excellency, Arinda said. I'll leave at once.
She keyed off the comm. It was done. Or at least half of it was done. But she had time. She had plenty of time.